Chapter 4. Snowflakes. They say that there can never be two snowflakes that are exactly alike. But has anyone checked lately? Snow fell gently in the darkness. It piled up on rooftops. It kissed its way between the branches of trees. It settled on the forest floor with a gentle sizzle and smelled sharply of tin. Granny Weatherwax always checked the snow. She stood at her doorway with the candlelight streaming out around her and caught flakes on the back of a shovel. The white kitten watched the snowflakes. That's all it did. It didn't bat them with a paw, it just watched, very intently. Each flake spiraled down until it landed. Then the kitten would watch it some more, until it was sure the entertainment was over, before it looked up and selected another flake. It was called You, as in, You, stop that, and You, get off there. When it came to names, Granny Weatherwax didn't do fancy. Granny looked at the snowflakes and smiled in her not exactly nice way. Come back in, you, she said, and shut the door. Miss Tick was shivering by the fire. It wasn't very big, just big enough. However, there was the smell of bacon and peas pudding coming from a small pot on the embers, and beside the small pot was a much larger one, from which came the smell of chicken. Miss Tick didn't often get chicken, so she lived in hope. It had to be said that Granny Weatherwax and Miss Tick did not get on well with each other. Senior witches often don't. You could tell that they didn't by the way they were extremely polite all the time.
The snow is early this year, Mistress Weatherwax, said Miss Tick.
Indeed it is, Miss Tick, said Granny Weatherwax. And so interesting. Have you looked at it?
I've seen snow before, Mistress Weatherwax, said Miss Tick. It was snowing all the way up here. I had to help push the mail coach. I saw altogether too much snow. But what are we going to do about Tiffany Aching?
Nothing, Miss Tick. More tea?
She is rather our responsibility.
No, she's hers, first and last. She's a witch. She danced the winter dance. I saw her do it.
I'm sure she didn't mean to, said Miss Tick.
How can you dance and not mean it?
She's young. The excitement's probably run away with her feet. She didn't know what was going on.
She should have found out, said Granny Weatherwax. She should have listened.
I'm sure you always did what you were told when you were almost 13, Mistress Weatherwax, said Miss Tick, with just a hint of sarcasm.
Granny Weatherwax stared at the wall for a moment. No, she said. I made mistakes, but I didn't make excuses.
I thought you wanted to help the child.
I'll help her to help herself. That is my way. She's danced into the oldest story there is, and the only way out is through the other end. The only way, Miss Tick.
Miss Tick sighed. Stories, she thought. Granny Weatherwax believes the world is all about stories.
Oh, well, we all have our funny little ways. Except me, obviously.
Of course. It's just that she's so normal, Miss Tick said aloud. When you consider what she's done, I mean. And she thinks so much. And now that she's come to the attention of the Wintersmith, well...
She fascinates him, said Granny Weatherwax.
That's going to be a big problem.
Which she will have to solve.
And if she can't?
Then she's not Tiffany Aching, said Granny Weatherwax firmly. Ah, yes, she's in the story now, but she don't know it. Look at the snow, Miss Tick. They say that no two snowflakes are alike. How could they know something like that? Oh, they thinks they're so smart. I've always wanted to catch them out, and I have done. Go outside now and look at the snow. Look at the snow, Miss Tick. Every flake the same.
Tiffany heard the knocking and opened the tiny bedroom window with difficulty. Snow had built up on the sill, soft and fluffy.
"We didn't want to wake you," said Rob Anybody. "But awfully wee Billy said you ought to see this."
Tiffany yawned. "What am I looking for?" she muttered.
"Catch some of young flakes," said Rob. "No, not on your hand. They'll melt tea soon."
In the gloom, Tiffany felt around for her diary. It wasn't there. She looked on the floor in case she'd knocked it off. Then a match flared as Rob Anybody lit a candle, and there was the diary, looking as though it had always been there, but, she noticed, also being suspiciously cold to the touch. Rob looked innocent, a sure sign of guilt. Tiffany saved the questions for later and poked the diary out the window. Flakes settled on it. She lifted it closer to her eyes.
"They look just like any ordin..."
she began and then stopped, and then said, "Oh, no. This must be a trick."
"Aye. Well, you could call it that," said Rob. But it's his trick, you ken.
Tiffany stared at falling flakes drifting in the light of the candle. Every one of them was Tiffany aching, a little, frozen, sparkling Tiffany aching. Downstairs, Miss Treason burst out laughing. The doorknob on the door to the tower bedroom was rattled angrily. Roland de Chum's Fanley, pronounced Chuffley, it wasn't his fault, carefully paid it no attention.
"What are you doing in there, child?" said a muffled voice peevishly. "Nothing, Aunt Anuta," said Roland, without turning around from his desk.
One of the advantages of living in a castle was that rooms were easy to lock. His door had three iron locks and two bolts that were as thick as his arm.
"Your father is calling out, you know," said another voice with even more peeve.
"He whispers, Aunt Araminta," Roland said calmly, carefully writing an address on an envelope. "He only cries out when you set the doctors on him."
"It's for his own good."
"He cries out," Roland repeated, and then licked the flap on the envelope.
Aunt Araminta rattled the doorknob again.
"You are a very ungrateful child. You will starve, you know. We will get the guards to batter this door down."
Roland sighed. The castle had been built by people who did not like to have their doors battered down, and anyone trying to do that here would have to carry the battering ram up a narrow spiral staircase with no room at the top to turn around, and then find a way to knock down a door four planks thick and made of oak timbers so ancient it was like iron. One man could defend this room for months, if he had provisions. He heard some more grumbling noise outside, and then the echo of the aunt's shoes as they went down the tower. Then he heard them screaming at the guards again. It wouldn't do them much good. Sergeant Roberts and his guards, Kevin and Neville and Trevor, were edgy about taking orders from the aunts. Everyone knew, though, that if the Baron died before the boy was 21, the aunts would legally run the estate until he was. And while the Baron was very ill, he was not dead. It was not a happy time to be a disobedient guard, but the sergeant and his men survived the anger of the aunts by being, when their orders justified it, deaf, stupid, forgetful, confused, ill, lost, or, in the case of Kevin, foreign. For now, Roland kept his excursions for the small hours, when no one was around and he could pillage the kitchen. That's when he went in to see his father. The doctors kept the old man dosed with something, but Roland held his hand for a while for the comfort that it gave. If he found jars of wasps or leeches, he threw them into the moat. He stared at the envelope. Perhaps he ought to tell Tiffany about this, but he didn't like to think about it. It would worry her, and she might try to rescue him again, and that wouldn't be right. This was something he had to face. Besides, he wasn't locked in. They were locked out. While he held the tower, there was a place where they couldn't poke and pry and steal. He'd got what was left of the silver candlesticks under his bed, along with what remained of the antique silver cutlery. Gone to be valued, they'd said. And his mother's jewel box. He'd been a bit late finding that. It was missing her wedding ring, and the silver and garnet necklace his grandmother had left to her. But tomorrow he'd get up early and ride over to Two Shirts with the letter. He liked writing them. They turned the world into a nicer place, because you didn't have to include the bad bits. Roland sighed. It would have been nice to tell Tiffany that in the library he'd found a book called Sieges and Survival by the famous general Callus Tacticus, who invented tactics, which was interesting. Who'd have thought such an ancient book could be so useful? The general had been very firm about having provisions, so Roland had plenty of small potatoes, large sausages, and heavy dwarf bread, which was handy to drop on people. He glanced across the room, where there was a portrait of his mother that he had carried up from the cellar where they had left it, waiting to be cleaned, they said. Right beside it, if you knew what you were looking for, an area of wall about the size of a small door looked lighter than the rest of the stones. The candlestick next to it looked slightly lopsided, too. There were lots of advantages to living in a castle. Outside, it began to snow. The Nac-Mac Feagles peered out at the fluffy flakes from the thatch of Miss Treason's cottage. By the light that managed to leak out from the grubby windows below, they watched the tiny Tiffany's whirl past.
"See it with snowflakes," said Big Jan.
"Ha!"
Daft Woolley snatched a spiralling flake.
"You got to admit, he's done the wee pointy hat really well," he said. "He must like the big wee hag a lot."
"It doesna make any sense," said Rob Anybody. "He's the winter. He's all the snow and ice and storms and frosts. She's just a wee big girl. You canna say that's an ideal match. What do you say, Billy?" Polly!
The Gonagall was chewing the end of his mouse pipes while staring at the flakes with a faraway look in his eyes. But somehow, Rob's voice broke into his thoughts because he said,
What does he ken aboot people? He's no as alive as a wee insect, yet he's as powerful as the sea. And he's sweet on the big wee hag, why? What can she be to him? What will he do next? I tell you this, Snowflakes is just the beginning. We must watch out, Rob. This may become very bad.
Up in the mountains, 990,393,072,007 Tiffany Akings landed lightly on the old packed snow on a ridge and began an avalanche that carried away more than 100 trees and a hunting lodge. This wasn't Tiffany's fault. It wasn't her fault that people slipped on packed layers of her, or couldn't open the door because she was piled up outside it, or got hit by handfuls of her thrown by small children. Most of her had melted by breakfast time the next day, and besides, no one noticed anything strange except witches, who don't take people's word for things, and a lot of kids no one listened to. Even so, Tiffany woke up feeling very embarrassed. Miss Treason didn't help at all.
"At least he likes you,"
she said, while she ferociously wound up her clock. "I wouldn't know about that, Miss Treason," said Tiffany, really not wanting this conversation at all. She was washing the dishes at the sink, her back to the old woman, and she was glad that Miss Treason could not see her face, and, if it came to it, that she couldn't see Miss Treason's face either.
"What will your young man say about it, I wonder?"
"What young man is that, Miss Treason?" said Tiffany, as stonily as she could manage.
"He writes you letters, girl."
"And I expect you read them with my eyes," Tiffany thought. "Roland? He's just a friend." "Sort of," she said.
"A sort of friend?"
"I'm not going into this," Tiffany thought. "I bet she's grinning. It's not her business anyway." "Yes," she said. "That's right, Miss Treason. A sort of friend." There was a long silence which Tiffany used to scrub out the bottom of an iron saucepan.
"It is important to have friends," said Miss Treason,
in a voice that was somehow smaller than it had been. It sounded as though Tiffany had won.
"When you have finished, dear, please be kind enough to fetch me my shamble bag."
Tiffany did so and hurried off into the dairy. It was always good to get in there. It reminded her of home, and she could think better. There was a cheese-shaped hole in the bottom of the door, but Horace was back in his broken cage, making a very faint noise that may have been cheese snores. She left him alone and dealt with the morning's milk. At least it wasn't snowing. She felt herself blushing and tried to stop herself from even thinking about it. And there was going to be a coven meeting tonight. Would the other girls know? Of course they would. Witches paid attention to snow, especially if it was going to be embarrassing for somebody.
"Tiffany, I wish to speak with you,"
Miss Treason called out. Miss Treason had hardly ever called her Tiffany before. It was quite worrying to hear her say the name. Miss Treason was holding up a shamble. Her seeing-eye mouse was dangling awkwardly among the bits of bone and ribbon.
"This is so inconvenient," she said, and raised her voice.
"Ach, you muddlins, come on out. I ken you're there. I can see you looking at me."
Feagle heads appeared from behind very nearly everything.
"Good. Tiffany Aching, sit down."
Tiffany sat down quickly.
"The time like this, too," said Miss Treason, laying down the shamble. "This is so inconvenient, but there is no doubt,"
she paused for a moment and said,
"I will die the day after tomorrow, on Friday, just before 6:30 in the morning."
It was an impressive statement, and did not deserve this reply.
"Oh, that's a shame to be missing the weekend like that," said Rob Anybody. "Are you going somewhere nice?"
But you can't die," Tiffany burst out. "You're 113 years old, Miss Treason."
"You know, that is very probably the reason, child," said Miss Treason calmly. "Didn't anyone tell you that witches have forewarning when they're going to die? Anyway, I like a good funeral."
"Oh, aye, you canna beat a good wake," said Rob Anybody, "with lots of boozing and dancing and greeting and feasting and boozing."
"There may be some sweet sherry," said Miss Treason. "As for feasting, I always say you cannot go far wrong with a ham roll."
"But you can't just—"
Tiffany began, and stopped as Miss Treason turned her head fast like a chicken does.
"Leave you like this," she said. "Is that what you were going to say?"
No, Tiffany lied.
"You'll have to move in with someone else, of course," said Miss Treason. "You're not really senior enough to take on a cottage, not when there's older girls waiting."
"You know I don't want to spend my life in the mountains, Miss Treason," Tiffany said quickly.
"Oh, yes, Miss Tick did tell me," said the old witch. "You want to go back to your little chalk hills."
"They're not little," Tiffany snapped, louder than she'd meant to.
"Yes, this has been a bit of a trying time all round," said Miss Treason very calmly. "I shall write some letters, which you will take down to the village, and then you shall have your afternoon off. We shall hold the funeral tomorrow afternoon."
"Sorry, you mean before you die?" said Tiffany.
"Why, of course. I don't see why I shouldn't have some fun." "Good thinking," said Rob Anybody. "That's the kind of sensible detail people usually fail to consider." "We call it a going-away party," said Miss Treason. "Just for witches, of course. Other people tend to get a bit nervous. I can't think why. And on the bright side, we've got that splendid ham that Mr. Armbinder gave us last week for settling the ownership of the chestnut tree, and I'd love to try it."
An hour later, Tiffany set out, with her pockets full of notes to butchers and bakers and farmers in the local villages. She was a bit surprised at the reception she got. They seemed to think it was all a joke.
"Miss Treason's not going to go dying at her time of life," said a butcher, weighing out sausages. "I heard that death's come for her before, and she slammed the door on him."
13 dozen sausages, please," said Tiffany, "cooked and delivered."
"Are you sure she's going to die?"
said the butcher, uncertainty clouding his face.
"No, but she is," said Tiffany.
And the baker said,
"Don't you know about that clock of hers? She had it made when her heart died. It's like a clockwork heart, see?"
"Really?" said Tiffany. "So, if her heart died and she had a new one made of clockwork, how did she stay alive while the new heart was being made?"
"Oh, that'd be by magic, obviously," said the baker.
"But a heart pumps blood, and Miss Treason's clock is outside her body," Tiffany pointed out. "There's no tubes."
"It pumps the blood by magic," said the baker, speaking slowly. He gave her an odd look. "How can you be a witch if you don't know this stuff?"
It was the same everywhere else. It was as if the idea of there being no Miss Treason was the wrong shape to put in anyone's head. She was 113 years old, and they argued that it was practically unheard of for anyone to die aged 113. It was a joke, they said. Or she'd got a scroll signed in blood that meant she'd live forever. Or you'd have to steal her clock before she'd die. Or every time the Grim Reaper came for her, she lied about her name or sent him to another person. Or maybe she was just feeling a bit unwell. By the time Tiffany was finished, she was wondering if it really was going to happen. Yet Miss Treason had seemed so certain. And if you were 113, the amazing thing wasn't that you were going to die tomorrow, but that you were still alive today. With her head full of gloomy thoughts, she set out to the coven meeting. Once or twice she thought she could feel Feagles watching her. She never knew how she could feel this. It was a talent you learned, and you learned to put up with it most of the time. All the other young witches were there by the time she arrived, and they had even got a fire lit. Some people think that coven is a word for a group of witches, and it's true that's what the dictionary says, but the real word for a group of witches is an argument. In any case, most of the witches Tiffany had met never used the word. Mrs. Earwig did, though, almost all the time. She was tall and thin and rather chilly, and wore silver spectacles on a little chain, and used words like avatar and sigil. And Anna Grammer, who ran the coven because she'd invented it and had the tallest hat and the sharpest voice, was her star pupil, and her only one. Granny Weatherwax always said that what Mrs. Earwig did was wizard magic with a dress on, and Anna Grammer certainly dragged a lot of books and wands along to the meetings. Mostly, the girls did a few ceremonies to keep her quiet, because for them the real purpose of the coven was to see friends, even if they were friends simply because they were, really, the only people you could talk to freely, because they had the same problems and would understand what you were moaning about. They always met out in the woods, even in the snow. There was always enough wood lying around for a fire, and they all dressed up warm as a matter of course. Even in the summer, comfort on a broomstick at any height meant more layers of underclothing than anyone would dare guess at, and sometimes a couple of hot water bottles held on with string. At the moment, 3 small fireballs circled the fire. Anna Grammer had made them. You could slay enemies with them, she'd said. They made the others uneasy.
It was wizard magic, showy and dangerous. Witches preferred to cut enemies dead with a look. There was no sense in killing your enemy. How would she know you'd won?